So we talked before about this idea that light is, there was sort of an argument about what light was. And early on, there people recognized that there were sort of two ways that things could propagate through space. One was the phenomenon of a particle or a corpuscle, a corpuscle being a little body. The idea that, you know, the atomic theory, for instance, is that sort of an idea, that everything is made up in some indestructible little particle you could think of as an infinitesimal point where all the mass, charge, or whatever is concentrated. So that's a particle idea, and it's an idealization. They did tend to think about it as the way nature was, but we now know that it's not what nature is doing, but we still use it because it works. When we're throwing a baseball, the size of the baseball is tiny compared to the length of distance that it travels, and so its size generally doesn't matter. Now, if you want to really calculate it, you need to take account of its spin and angular, you know, the threads on the ball and stuff like that. So now the other kind of thing that we talked about was waves. And, you know, we tend to think of waves sort of like waves in the water or waves on a string or waves in a spring that sort of oscillate back and forth. Those are longitudinal. And we started to talk about the idea that both of these made some sense in certain circumstances in light. Now, I want to suggest that this is actually a very interesting point of demarcation in the scientific thought period, because light is the first place where we see the sort of dichotomy that starts to occur in what we call quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is very important for you to understand basically almost, well, a wide variety of modern technology. Okay, so wherever you guys go after you're done with me, you know, if it has anything to do with technology, there will be a significant chance that the material in this course will be at the foundation of whatever that technology is. So in any case, this idea that light could be a wave and a particle when these seem completely different is very strange. We've now spent a couple weeks talking about it as a particle. This is what geometric optics was. And it's really not correct. I mean, in the sense that it's an idealization that, okay, it works in some limited circumstances. But now we want to revive the concept that Huygens had suggested, which we talked about a little bit, which was that light is a wave. Now, we know light is a wave because we looked at Maxwell's equations and we realized that you can get a wave equation out of them. And so we've already, that came later, but way before Maxwell had gathered that all together, there was this understanding of, or suggestion of what light could be, and there were some experiments. The first place that the difference between a particle and a wave could be discerned was the attempt to detect what's called interference. So interference is what we're going to talk about today and Thursday. Interference is, the reason that we use the word interference is because we're talking about, at the fundamental level, the interplay or interference of waves of light from two different sources. And because they're waves, depending on how they line up when they get to some destination, they can cancel each other out so that you don't see any light, or they can reinforce each other constructively, as we say, to create more light. Okay, this is not what you'd expect from a particle idea. If I throw two balls at that board, then and I have perfect aim, they're going to hit exactly the same spot, and so I'm going to get two times one of their intensities, so to speak. But if light is a wave, we're going to see that what shows up over there can be quite a bit more complicated. Okay. So let's just think of a very basic example, and by basic, I don't mean simple, I just mean at the base, at the foundation. Let's imagine we have a wall here, okay? And behind it, let's imagine that we have a screen, okay? And so we have somebody, you know, so here's, again, I apologize for my bad art. And somebody's going to throw a ball here. And, okay, let's say that I can, you know, throw this ball really hard. And it's going to go towards this hole. Where is it going to show up on the screen? At the top, at the bottom, all over the screen, what's going to happen? A little lower because it's got some trajectory. So it'll show up here, right? What if I throw another one? Same thing, right? So if I were to build up, you know, a histogram, you know, what I'd see is, you know, I get zero, you know, nothing, 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 and then all of a sudden I'd get N hits, and then I get nothing, 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 nothing. Okay? Now, I'm not a perfect thrower. This hole is say, a little bigger than the size of the ball, so there's some wiggle room. I might actually get something that looks like this. Well, I might get something in the adjacent bins just because I'm not perfect. Okay? If I can get it through the hole at all. All right? So that's what you'd expect from a particle. And the width of this thing is purely, essentially, measurement error, meaning I can't control exactly what I'm doing with these balls. All right? Now, that's fine, but that's... Okay, let's think about this from the point of view of a wave. Well, actually, before we get to a wave, let's now say we have a second slit over here. All right, now, okay, my 4-year-old daughter is going to throw, and she's practicing to be a major league pitcher, and so she's going to throw this ball. She needs to be shorter than me, okay? So she throws this through another slit. So where are these going to show up? Okay? So these are going to show up, similar thing. Okay? Okay? So that's what you'd expect. You'd expect two slits to produce two regions of intensity of the radiation. She is a good thrower. I'm assuming that's why you're smiling. So in any case, you would expect two regions of intensity. Now, let's think about this from the point of view of waves, okay? So now, you know, this is a little hard to do this with the original analogy, but let's imagine that we've emitted waves here from, you know, some general, well, let's not even do it that way. Let's imagine we have a plane wave, okay, approaching this wall with the two slits in it. Okay? Now, what happens when we get to this location and this location is we block out all of this wave, all of this wave, and all of this wave. Okay? So when we get to this location, we only have this little, and I'm exaggerating the width of these slits. These slits are very small. Okay? We've only got this little tiny segment of wave that's going to get to the holes here, the slots, the slits, and be able to pass through. Now, what Huygens says is that if this is the case, then every point here, okay, acts as a source of waves. Every point on a wave acts as a source of more waves. This is how waves propagate. Okay, this is his Huygens' principle. This is the idea behind it, right? Well, what would this cause us to do? Well, we block out all these sources of waves and all these and these. We only keep this source of waves here. Okay? It's a very narrow region. Okay? So what that means is that this, there's only one, essentially one point that's now a source of waves that I'm keeping from this original plane wave. And it's going to transmit waves like this. Okay? All right? And the same is going to happen up here. I'm going to get some you know, each place is going to be almost like I have a little source of waves right at that location. Okay? Now, you could do this in a perfectly calm swimming pool. If you're really careful, you could do it in a bathtub, whatever. You could do this with water waves. Just put something in the way of the water, make waves far enough behind it so that when they hit this slit, they're close to a plane wave. And what you see, what you will see, is what comes out the other side, is what Huygens is suggesting, meaning that it will come out as if that is a source of waves itself, and there'll be semicircular wave fronts. Okay. So what ends up happening, because of this, is that if I take any location on this screen, okay. And I didn't draw it far enough, but let's see if I can. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do a very good job here. If I had a screen here, okay, what I would get is an intense region here and here, because my each of these lines represents a peak in the wave. We'll just take a snapshot in an instant in time. So at this point, the wave coming from this slot has a peak. That's what's represented by this here. And it also corresponds to a peak from here. That's what's represented by this. Okay, so at this point, they're both going to peak at the same time or trough at the same time. So they're actually both constructively interfering, meaning they both add up. They don't cancel each other out. They're doing the same thing. They're either peaking or troughing at the same, you know, at the same time. Here, I have the opposite. Okay? It's a little, actually, a little harder to see, but basically this would be where they're both troughing at the same time. And then here, they're peaking at the same time. Okay? So now, what ends up happening, and if I had more wave fronts, twice as many wave fronts, and now my drawing is going to become quite a disaster. Okay? And I can... Okay. If my wavelength is small, now I get another place where I get constructive interference. I get another place here. Okay. I would get another... No, that's not one. Okay. So at some point, I mean, I'm not drawing it very well, but what you end up getting is, for instance, this drawing that I just did here. Now I have this place... this place, and this place, these are points of intensity. Okay? And they're not directly behind the slits in the wall that I had. Okay? It's as if I threw the ball, you know, it's as if, it looks as if I threw the ball through here, it ends up over here. Okay? That's what we seem to see. We see some fraction of the time that way away, well outside of my experimental error, I end up getting intensity from both beams of light. Okay? And the interference is referring to the fact that I get a bright region here, a dark region here, a bright region here, dark, bright, dark, and it just alternates on that screen. Okay? All right? This is completely not consistent with the particle idea of what light is. And so after Huygens made his suggestion, a guy named Young came along and said, you know, why don't I test it by doing what we call now the double slit experiment? Okay, the double slit experiment is exactly what I've drawn here. Have light incident on two slits, very narrow slits. It turns out that the distance between these slits needs to be of order the wavelength of light, okay? And their width needs to be that of that order. But light will be incident on this wall, and then we should see not this original drawing I did with two intense regions, but we should see this sort of changing bright and dark regions across the face of the screen. Okay? That's what interference is about, and we're going to try to mathematically describe that. Okay. So let's actually look at this sort of geometrically. So let's take a screen here. Okay, and this should be parallel to the wall that the slits are in. And what we want, and this distance here will be distance D. And we're going to have some point P here. We want to understand what's it going to look like. This point P could be anywhere on the screen. Okay? Well, we have two distances. We have R1 and we have R2. These are the distances from the center of each slit to point P. And we're ignoring the size of the slit here. These are, again, sort of like point openings. Okay? Now, we can, and okay, so there's also this distance here we call L. And what we can do, there's also another line here that we want to draw. And I'll do it dotted. That is the point from halfway between the two slits to the point P. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to make an approximation. This distance, D, is much smaller than L. Okay? So, in terms of the triangles, the angles in this triangle here, using the bisector, are going to be very similar to the angles between the two rays R1 and R2. Okay? So, all right. First of all, we could draw this triangle here, where from slit 1 to ray 2, and we'll draw a perpendicular to that line. So now we create a right triangle here. All right? Now, again, the angles in this right triangle are going to look fairly similar to the angles in the triangle bounded by the bisector, okay? But let's just consider this right triangle for a second. So, okay. All right, let me just... All right, so First of all, let's take the bisector here and the horizontal line. We have an angle here, theta. Okay? Now, this triangle, again, it's a right triangle. It has, you have to consider the fact that all three of these lines, R1, R2, and R3, and the bisector, are all very much essentially parallel to each other. Again, because L is much greater than D. And what this means, trigonometrically, is that this angle here is also theta. Okay? So basically, this triangle here is the same as this triangle here. Okay? In terms of the angles. And by doing that, we're basically relating this angle essentially to this angle. Okay? And, of course, this angle here is also a right angle. But what we want to know is, what does the geometry here tell us about the light intensity at point P? Okay? Well, this distance here, R1, okay, and this distance here, which is part of R2, are the same. They're very similar. R1 and R2 are, the whole of R2 are going to be different. All right? So R1 goes from this slit to point P, but this from this slit here too to point P is going to be a longer distance. Okay? So just keep in mind that this length here is R2, the whole thing. What you want to know is, the way that I've drawn it, you can see that R1 and R2 are actually different lengths. Okay? And this is the important part of the geometry here. So basically, we could use a term delta, okay, which is this piece here, which is going to equal the difference between R1 and R2. Okay? And this, because of this way that we did our triangles, because we can sort of say that this angle is theta, this difference is approximately d, which is the hypotenuse of that triangle, times sine of theta. Okay? So this delta here is basically telling me what the difference is between these two lengths, not between R1. It's a difference between R1 and R2, where R2 is referring to this whole thing. These two pieces, though, this leg and this leg, are going to be the same, or very close to the same. So we want to know what is this delta here, which will tell us something about how out of step the light can get. So let me think about it this way. Let's say that R1 equals 5 wavelengths, okay? R2 is going to be greater than 5 wavelengths, okay? So if this is 5 wavelengths, then if it peaks here, will it be peaking or troughing at point P? If light at some moment in time is at a peak at this slit, and this distance R1 is an integral number of wavelengths, will it be peaking or troughing when it gets to point P? Peaking. Okay? Because it will be 5. It will be up 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? Now, any light coming from this slit isn't going to be doing the same number of wavelengths. It will be doing more. Okay? So we don't know how more. So we could say that this is equal to 5 plus some angle, delta. Okay? Or some distance, delta. All right? And this distance is going to correspond to a phase difference. So if delta if this is one half of a wavelength, then if this starts out peaking, what will it end up at point P? Will it be peaking or troughing? So if this distance, R2, is a half integer number of wavelengths, if it starts out at this point slit where it's a peak, what will it be at point P? It'll be a trough, okay? I won't dare draw it, but it'll be a trough, okay? So what that means is that this one will be low, and this one will be high, okay? So the sum of the light is going to be, if we think about it from the point of view of the electric field, the sum is going to be E1 plus E2, okay? Well, this one will be at a peak, so this will be plus E max, whatever you want to call it. It's a sinusoidal wave. And this will be minus E max, which means that the E field, the total E field at point P is zero. Okay? And the reason that it's zero is because there is a difference in path length between this leg R2 and this leg R1. And if that path difference, delta, is a half integer number of wavelengths, then the light from this slit will be a half a cycle out of phase with this slit, and they will cancel. If this difference, delta, is a unit, it is an integral number of wavelengths, then that's not what will happen. Then they will both, you know, assuming that they hit this in phase, they will both arrive at point P in phase, and they will constructively interfere, meaning they will add. Okay? So, and I could do this basically for all the points along this. It would be tedious, but I could do it, and I could determine where it's bright and dim and bright and dim. Okay? Now, there is a rule of thumb, which is that, okay, if you take the geometry here, I mean, we've kind of said it. This distance, delta, is the difference in path length. And what we said is for constructive interference, okay, then this distance, d sine theta, has to equal some integer number of wavelengths, okay, of the light. Okay? So m is some integer, we call it the order, but it is some integer that can be 0, 1, 2, 3, whatever, and it is how many wavelengths, essentially, this difference matters when we consider light going to point P. So this is a very useful thing to keep in mind. And then there's one where we can talk about destructive interference. And here, we have the same quantity, d sine theta, but now it needs to be some half integer number of wavelengths. So here, I will get destructive interference if I am at 1.5 wavelengths for delta. This distance is 1.5 wavelengths, or a half a wavelength, or 2.5, or 3.5, or 10.5. So wherever, whatever angle, because d is fixed, whatever angle gives me a half integer of wavelength difference, I will get destructive interference. So that angle, again, is this angle right here. It's the angle from the two slits. I mean, it's halfway between the two slits, but they're so close together. It's the angle from the two slits to the point on the wall where the light would be emitted. Okay? Now these, so, and we can draw this, what you end up getting is something like this. So where this would be, say, intensity or E field or what have you, but what we see is intensity. And these bright regions we call bright fringes. And the regions in between them are called dark fringes. Okay? Now, you see that this relationship has a wavelength in it. And that's actually very useful because if I send a different wavelength of light through here, it will produce a different interference pattern. The spread in the peaks and the troughs will be different. And this actually becomes a very powerful way that we can separate out different colors of light. We want to know what is the intensity of light. That's the important thing. So let's take our example again. Let's try to simplify it a little bit. We have two slits. We have a point P. And we have slit 2 and slit 1. Okay? All right? And we want to know, so this is going to be E1 and E2 in terms of the orientation of the E field. Once we know the orientation of the E field, of course, we also take care of the orientation of the magnetic field in the electromagnetic wave. So we'll just consider the E field. But we have some path difference, exactly what I drew before. Okay? I'm just getting rid of all the angles and stuff that we had before. Let's just keep track of the fact that, as we said, there is some path difference delta here that we want to keep track of at each of these points P. All right? Now, we know that E1, let's say it has the same magnitude E0 as E2. And we're looking at a point P here. So let's take that light from E2 will arrive at P2 some phase different than E1. Because again, there's a path difference delta. Okay? Now we know from geometry that this phase is going to be the fraction of a wavelength 2 pi delta over lambda. Okay? So if the wavelength is 500 nanometers and delta is 100 nanometers, then, so just as an example, okay, this is 2 pi radians times the ratio of delta over lambda. If delta is 1/5 of a wavelength, then this is going to be 1/5 of 2 pi radians. That's what phi is going to be. Okay, so it's just the angular offset caused by some distance delta difference between these two paths. Okay? So we know what phi is here, and that goes in there. And we also know that delta, we wrote that down. So this is actually 2 pi d sine theta over lambda. Okay? That's what we had gotten a minute ago. Well, this is nice because theta is an angle that exists in our real world. That's just the angle here between of the point P with respect to a line straight from the slit to the screen. Okay? So I can measure theta. And so now, if I substitute this expression in here, ignoring the time dependence, I know basically what the I can tell what the E1 and E2 will be at each point in time based on the angle that I'm dealing with, theta, with respect to the distance from the slit to the screen. Okay? Now, if I keep a track of the fact that EP equals E1 plus E2, okay, then I can write this in the following way. This is E0 sine omega t plus sine omega t plus phi. So I'm just substituting E1 and E2 in here. And then I can use a trigonometric identity to rewrite this as 2 E0 cosine phi over 2 times, just don't want to make this, okay, sine omega t plus phi over 2. Okay? So this is just a trigonometric identity. Okay? The sum of sine omega t and sine omega t plus phi is 2 times cosine phi over 2 sine omega t plus phi over 2. Okay? So now I have my expression for what the E field is at point P from the two slits. Okay? And I could, since I know what phi is, I could write this out more explicitly. I won't do that. But basically, this is now, this E field is a function of, because of the expression that we have here for phi, okay, the electric field is a function of D, the distance between the two slits, lambda, the wavelength of light that's going to the slits, and sine theta, which is the angle from the line from the slits to the screen. Okay? So the geometry of the double slit experiment, the D and theta, plus the wavelength of light, which makes a difference. Okay? Now, once we've done this, we've already considered this idea of the intensity of light about 3 chapters ago. We talked about the pointing vector. We said, okay, light is an electromagnetic wave. What is the intensity of that wave, meaning the intensity of light, we say now? And we calculate that as the timed averaged pointing vector, S. Okay? And the expression that we had that related these, okay, I mentioned this in proportionality, but explicitly, the relationship between the intensity and the electric field is E squared over 2 mu naught C. Okay, so this is, we had done this in chapter 34. Okay? So I mentioned, you had a question earlier about this, and I mentioned that I is proportional to E squared, and so this is just coming from our considerations of the pointing vector, which was that energy density of the wave. Okay? Or power density of the wave, I should say. So this is what our intensity is. So let's just let's ignore the constants. This just means, for our case, that the intensity is equal to E sub P squared. Okay? Okay, so that means that I is equal okay, so yeah, let's all right, I want to skip a couple steps here. So basically, all right, this is E sub P as a function of time. What we want to know is, what is E sub P, the average E sub P, over time? Okay? So we want to know, you know, we want to take this expression and calculate its average. Now, maybe one of you will recall, if you have a sine function that changes with time, which we have here in this sine, what is the average value of, well, we shouldn't do it that way, actually. No. All right. Let's consider first I as a function of time. It's going to be better to do it this way. So we would have, just writing here, we have E of P, okay? Then we have 4E0, E naught, times cosine squared, phi over 2, times sine squared, omega t, plus phi over 2. Okay, so this is taking this expression and squaring it from here. Okay? Now, we've gone through before where we have the average of the square of a time-varying sine wave. We did this when we had to calculate the RMS, say, of the voltage. So right now, we have a time-varying trigonometric function, the sine squared omega t plus phi over 2. Does anybody remember what the average value of this is? Of a time-varying sine or cosine? Yeah, it would be, yeah, well, this doesn't have a magnitude, this is just a sine, so it would come out as the square, okay, of one over the square root of 2, or the square of the square root of 2 over 2, okay? So, here, that means which equals 1/2, okay? So, this, if I want to calculate the average of this, then this whole sine squared piece, it's just 0.5, it's just 1/2, okay? Because we're just averaging over time. So if I were to multiply all this out, then I have 2 times E0 times the cosine squared of phi over 2. Okay? It's proportional to 2 times E naught over the cosine squared of phi over 2. Now, here, we've already got a proportionality, so these constants don't really matter. So we could just write this as I average equals some value I max times cosine squared phi over 2. And we won't really worry about what the actual magnitude of I max is. What we really care about is this behavior right here. Okay? And, of course, we can write that out more explicitly as IMAX. Well, I know people over there can't see. So what we get is I equals IMAX cosine squared of pi d sine theta over lambda. So I've substituted in this expression for phi into this expression over here. So basically what we get is that, I mean, we've got some constants lambda and d, but the thing that we're going to vary is theta. And so we have that the intensity is going to be a function of theta on the screen. Okay? All right, let me... let me try to show this to you. This, my luck won't work. Does anybody have any questions about this first? Yeah.
Where's alpha?
No. Yeah, this is... So, yeah, I've used this before. And the book uses it sometimes. This simple here is not alpha. Okay? This is proportional to... Okay? All right? Okay, so this is When we have an expression here, I don't care about all the constants. I just care about the angular distribution of this light intensity. So I'm only caring about the proportionality of this thing to whatever the function is in terms of phi, okay? All right? Because to zero, I mean, I don't know what E0 is. I've got a laser right here. I don't know what E0 is, okay? But I can at least understand the geometric arrangement of the light on the screen by just saying, okay, what is this thing proportional to? The thing is proportional to cosine squared phi over 2. Okay? We've used this before in other cases, particularly when we were dealing with voltages for AC circuits.